Hello there.
At last we will reveal ourselves to the Jedi. At last we will have revenge.
Hello there. Welcome to a podcast about Star Wars Shatterpoint and the Star Wars universe. My name is Jesse Aiken, and I'm joined by my co-host, Aman Khusro. How are we doing today, Aman?
Jesse, we are doing very well. Very excited for our special guest, who we'll introduce in just a moment. And I'm just excited to talk about great Shatterpoint tactics, games. I think this is like where I really enjoy some of the aspect, is getting not too grindy, of course, but just talking about the minutiae and the nuance of certain lists and how they perform.
I completely agree. And I also love how the minutiae is going to lead to maybe bigger, more broader discussions that can kind of frame our competitive year going forward and all things like that. And we're going to get into more of that shortly, but we have someone to introduce on the show, Magic Nick. Thanks for joining us.
I'm pretty excited to be here. Looking forward to talking with you guys.
We're super excited to talk with you as well. And we're going to get right back to you, Nick. But first, we just got to give a quick shout out to our patrons. And our patrons support us at patreon.com/hellotherecast. And we have three new patrons who are joining us this week. We have the Thoughtless Casual Gaming Podcast, who joined us at the Padawan Acolyte tier. And then we have Joshua and John, who joined us at the Jedi Knight Sith Warrior tier. So thank you to John, Joshua, and the Thoughtless Casual Gaming Podcast for being our newest patrons. Welcome to the Hello There family.
Absolutely. Thank you, new patrons. And of course, we've got to thank our producers while we're here. We've got to thank our producer, Commander Redwolf, and our ultimate producers, Sith Emperor Kevin, Grandmaster Griffin, Daimyo Matt, Bounty Hunter Brady, and Grand Moff Matt.
What a squad, man.
What a squad. And I will shout out while we're here, Amon. This is a good time to jump on the Patreon, Discord, and everything like that, because we're about to start a new league. We just finished up our last league, and we've actually got a lot of other plans that we're going to announce very soon on there. So jump in there if you want to be part of that.
Yeah, just to give you a little heads up, our next league is starting on April 25th. And the way that we're doing it is a little different than some of the other leagues we've run. There's been a growing desire to work on the premier format in our community, specifically because that is Atomic Mass Games' preferred way to play the game, is the premier format. We've also seen a lot of people want to expand upon the different types of miniatures they're playing, as well as some of the more newer miniatures that are coming out shortly. So for the first 3 weeks of the league, you will submit a premier list. You get to play that premier list for the first 3 weeks of the league, which means you will still have to follow the premier league format rules. Then you can change your list for the last 2 weeks of Swiss. And then from there, the top eight will swing into a top cut. And then we'll have another league that runs for 4 weeks that mirrors the top cut, so that you can play games even if you don't make the top cut. So we're super excited. I mean, the last couple leagues, we've been in the high 30s, low 40s. So I'm pretty sure we'll be in that same number there. And it's a ton of fun, and it's very collaborative. And I don't think anyone's complained about any games they've played so far. So if you want to join like a safe, fun, interesting environment, let us know.
Absolutely. Completely agree. And it is such an amazing experience meeting all these different people in our community and getting to know each one of them while playing competitive games. And of course, Amon, we've got to close out our segment here and mention the people we are affiliated with. Hello There is affiliated with Mr. Laser at mr-laser.square.site. You can use our code HelloThere5 to get 5% off all of Mr. Laser's website. Very important right now with all these pre-orders up. Get your Mando box in. Maybe get that Han and Chewie pre-order going, things like that. And use our code HelloThere5 to let him know we sent you.
Absolutely. And terrain's been quite a bit of a debate lately because of how dense the terrain was at Adepticon 2024. So if you're looking to add more terrain to your table so that you can practice for how AMG wants us to play this game, check out our other affiliate sponsor, Imperial Terrain. They are the premier terrain makers for Star Wars games, including Shatterpoint and Legion. And you can use HelloThere5 for 5% off all of their digital terrain. My favorite thus far is the Pleasure Barge, Jabba's Pleasure Barge, that you can scale up to 200%, and it can work in games of Shatterpoint, which is pretty exciting.
Very good. All right, Mon, let's get into our main topic today, our interview with Magic Nick, winning the TTS League.
Winning the TTS League, and honestly, dominating the TTS League is more like it. Nick, we want to get to learn more about you, though, as a player before we get into your Star Wars Shatterpoint experience. So hope you're excited. Hope you're ready. And Jesse will kick us off.
So, Nick, we're going to start this off like we always do when we have people on, because we think this will paint a picture to the listener and get to know you better. What is your gaming history background, specifically miniatures gaming, and how did you get into it?
Yes. So I've always been interested by miniature gaming since I was like, you know, very young, like, I don't know, 10, 11 years old, but like, you know, it's a very expensive hobby. So really got into it with War Machine when Mark One came around, like, I don't know, 20 years ago or something now. Very competitive game. So that always appealed to me. And then from there, I mostly played that game and a few side games, right? Like I tried almost every game, like Song of Ice and Fire, the Warhammers, all that stuff. But it was really War Machine for me. And then I transitioned from War Machine to Marvel Crisis Protocol, which is another game that I've had a lot of major successes in. And then from Marvel Crisis, I got into Shatterpoint, basically.
I think that's awesome. It shows that you've played a ton of games. You have a ton of success and time and energy put into it. And you kind of develop a mind for the game, right? Because I'm a big believer in that. Once you figure out how to play one game and then another game, you can apply those same principles across all the games. Have you found that to be true, Nick?
Yeah, definitely. I think if you have the proper mindset, especially that, like, if you look at the three main games that I've played, they've all been designed by the same people. So it definitely helps, right? Because Privateer Press, a lot of their designers are like, were the Wills and all that stuff. And they made Atomic Mass games. So there was a lot of that similar mindset in terms of like scenario play and all that you could build your knowledge off of and then transfers from one game to the others, right?
No, you're absolutely correct. That resonates with me and Jesse so much. 100%, because we've also played a lot of MCP. Speaking of MCP, listener, Nick won the Shatterpoint TTS League, of course, which is why we have him on today, but he's also won the MCP TTS League as well, which is incredible.
Yeah, I did win the Season 8, which was like 200-something players. So yeah, so some pretty nice accomplishment. Another funny thing, in both games, I won my league right after Morgan won two in two TTS leagues for both games, which is pretty funny. We now have that little thing going on.
I love that. I mean, look, you and Morgan, two of the best players, right, in MCP and Shatterpoint. So, you know, I love that. I would love to see another final match maybe in the next league if Morgan plays between, you know, if you guys can both make it to the final, that would be amazing to watch. So tell me how you got into Shatterpoint.
It was a very silly way, actually. There was the Marvel meta at some point was like a little bit like stale. So I right around as Shatterpoint was being announced. So that definitely influenced my interest in the game. And then there was a 2-day event in my area in Montreal where there was one day which was Marvel and the other day was going to be Shatterpoint, like right, two big events back to back. And I was like, it would be really funny if I win both. So that's how I started. I just wanted to win two events back to back and having never really played Shatterpoint before. I ended up changing job and not being able to do it. That goal that got me started. It's very silly. It's nothing.
No, it just shows that championship winning mentality, which I love. I love
that.
Now, you said your local event, right, is where this inspiration came for you. Do you mind sharing your local event and where you play out of?
I play at the Abyss Game Store, probably one of the biggest, if not the biggest gaming store in Canada. It's amazing. If you guys ever go get into the Montreal area, I really recommend trying it out. It's a store that's on two levels and there's like a restaurant and a bar in it. So like you can, when you're playing downstairs in the gaming area for miniatures, there's a waiter coming and taking your order. So you can like drink beer while playing. It's amazing. Very bad for my wallet, but very, very amazing for the experience.
I actually love that. So you're part of that Montreal Shark Tank that they talk about, right?
Sort of. I'm sadly, because of my work now, I don't really get to play with them much anymore. But I guess I'm from the same area. I was one of the first players in there. And like, I really helped develop the mentality behind the Montreal Shark Tank, where we're just trying to improve as players every game and really just strive to be better at games nonstop.
Love that.
Man, what a gaming store. Very tempting. And it would not be safe for my wallet as well. I'd be ordering food during a match. Sounds amazing. Yeah, absolutely. Well, we are a Star Wars show as well, as in Star Wars universe. So we've got to ask you about your interest in Star Wars. How did that start? Are you a big Star Wars fan? Are you a casual Star Wars fan? Tell us about that.
I'd say I'm overall a pretty big Star Wars fan, a little bit less than I used to be. But I was a major fan a few years ago. I had a 2-year campaign in like the D&D RPG for Star Wars. Not the first one, not the D20 one, the second one they made.
The FFG one?
No, not the FFG one. The second one Wizard made, which was like right before we're calling it like 3.8 something edition, because it had like some of the fourth edition rules, but mixed with 3.5. Yeah, I had an amazing campaign. I was, for a while, I knew all seven lightsaber light forms, right? Like Ataru, Jimso, and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I was a really big fan a while back. Less of a fan now, still really enjoyed the universe, but I don't know. I've got out of it a little bit, I think.
I mean, the cool thing about Star Wars is you can kind of jump in and out as you want to, right? So certainly. I'm sure there'll be something that brings you back in eventually.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, some new cool shows or whatnot could always get me back in.
Well, speaking of shows and movies, do you have a favorite Star Wars?
Yes. Well, okay, I have two. The first one I think is a classic, which is the one that really got me hooked into the world, and it's Episode 4, A New Hope. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone can really go wrong with that. When I saw that when I was really young and my father showed it to me, I was instantly hooked. And otherwise, I think that my second favorite is one that's going to create a bit more controversy, but it's actually Episode 8, The Last Jedi. So, yeah.
Two back-to-back here, Aman, that we have two controversies of The Last Jedi.
Grand Moff Matt said it on the last episode as well. So
really? Damn.
Yeah, and he won Adepticon, so maybe there's something there. But it's a very divisive movie for sure. So that's very cool.
Well, look, we don't discriminate on your love for Star Wars. If you love Star Wars, we love you, because we all love Star Wars. And Star Wars is, a hit and miss in some places for many people, so I don't think that's too controversial. As a movie, I think it's good. And maybe we'll do an episode one day discussing the sequel trilogy. But today is not that day for sure.
I like that cliffhanger, what you said, Amon. As a movie, it's good. ... The Star Wars part is a little different there. So, and the great discussions on that movie. And the fact that it even generated those discussions shows that it's good art.
Right.
But we're still on the Star Wars topic. So we do have to ask you, Nick. If you had to pick a favorite Star Wars character, who would that be?
Ooh, that's a tough one. There's a lot of...
You could do more than one.
I'll try to just... Yeah, I have a lot of characters I like, but I think I'll go with just, honestly, Obi-Wan. I think it's really hard to not really like Obi-Wan, right? He's just amazing.
Yeah, no complaints here. I mean, he is one of the best written characters in all of Star Wars. I think that's an understood thing at the community at large. So when people say he's their favorite, you're like, okay. You know what I mean? And he's got a lot of growth.
Yeah. He's very interesting. The way he develops over the different medias is very nice.
Obi-Wan has a great character arc for sure. A lot of growth, a lot of pivotal moments as well. I mean, he is arguably, second or third main character in the Skywalker saga, if you will, or at least the first six movies. So,
yeah.
Do you have a favorite dark side character, Nick? Just to keep things going in that spicy manner?
Well, I mean, it's probably Jabba.
I love that.
That is a great answer.
I love Jabba. So.
Jabba's amazing. I just love those space slugs for some reason. They're so so wild. The whole concept is crazy.
You like crime lords. Is what you're telling us?
Not all crime lords, just the Utts in general.
Okay.
I love that.
Jabba the Hutt. Very good.
Really thank you for sharing your Star Wars interests and your favorite characters. I think that just really helps, frame why you love Star Wars for our listeners, which is awesome. Let's shift gears now back to Star Wars Shatterpoint. So there's been a lot of conversation and conjecture regarding the current Star Wars Shatterpoint meta. Some people say that it's stale. Some people have been saying that it's very innovative and it constantly is in flux. Overall, what are your thoughts on the Star Wars Shatterpoint meta?
That's always a tricky question, because I think it always needs to be framed in the mindset of, are you looking at the tippy top of competitive play? Or are you looking more in a broad sense? Because I think broadly speaking, for most players, the meta is very wide. But I do think that if you get to that really top performing high-end gameplay, I think it's kind of stale. And I'll expand on that a little bit. But let's just look at the TTSC, right? You can look at Morgan's list, his main list, which was Vader Maul, which he used. It's basically the list he used the most in between the first two seasons. If you look at that list, and you look at the list that I use the most, which is Vader Lumi, the only difference is I'm playing Lumi and Commandos instead of him playing Maul and Super Commandos. That's the only difference. The other four models are the exact same. I think there's a very clear trend of some models being very, very strong and the meta being a bit stale at the high end, right, of competitive play. But it doesn't mean that they only play that, but there's definitely, I think, a little bit of staleness at the top.
And that staleness just comes from the fact that when you're taking this, when you want to do really well in competitive events, I don't know if min-max is the right term, but perhaps taking the most optimal all-comers units, right? The units that can do well and be reliable regardless of who they're playing into, right?
Yeah, there's definitely a little bit of that. And I think there's like a few outliers of models that are clearly stronger than everything else, right? And stronger doesn't mean they're like, you know, twice as strong as something else. You just need to be a little bit stronger. And that's enough that it's going to give you an edge in a lot of matchups, right?
No, I think that makes total sense.
That's my conclusion at the moment in terms of meta. But of course, I don't play a lot with all of the stuff before it really releases. So like, I'm curious to see how it's going to shape up. But I do think there's a few outliers at the moment that are a bit too strong.
That's totally fair. I think some of these outliers will come up throughout this episode, which I'm very excited to talk about. But we'll continue on this meta discussion. And we want to know, Nick, what were your thoughts on combating like popular choices in the meta, or even things that you just were seeing as trends in TTS? And how did you end up just practicing for this event?
I actually ended up not practicing for this event. I didn't play Chatterpoint in like a few months.
Okay.
Because like my main practice partner was Morgan, but he stopped playing now for like a few months. So I haven't played Chatterpoint at all since then. I just had the chance of playing with like arguably the best player in the world for like, I don't know, 50 games or something. So like that was pretty good prep from back then, but for recent prep, absolutely nothing. I just had fine-tuned that list over the last few months, and I was very confident and was extremely strong. And yeah, I think it showed during the Dole League.
So when you fine-tuned that list, like, was that built around just what you wanted to play, or was it a combination of what you wanted to play, what you deemed incremental advantages, like we just discussed, and what you were seeing in the game?
So it really came down to As I started playing the game, I really started by trying everything. Like, I really have that mentality where, like, no matter what people online say, I'm just going to assume they don't know what they're talking about and just try everything for myself. So I ended up trying, like just to give you an example, the first version of Luminara that I played was Luminara, Aura Sing, and the 501st.
Okay.
Like, the spoiler alert, it was really bad.
You just needed to confirm.
Yeah. I just wanted to confirm and start really with like kind of like what was considered the bottom. And then as I played the game more, I really just figured out that Luminara is my favorite model to play by a wide margin. So I just went on the goal of trying to find the best pairing for. That was really my whole objective.
Yeah. Makes perfect sense.
Now, is there a reason why? Because looking at your list, it does lean a bit more Republic heavy. Does that come from your love of the Republic or any way, or you wanted to play Republic, or just as we expand upon your list later? And if it leads into that conversation, then maybe we can say we'll talk about that in just a moment. But I'm just curious as to why you leaned more Republic over, if you would compare to Morgan's list, particularly just a bunch of the good dark side stuff.
Yes, well, definitely because I lean toward playing Luminara as much as possible. I mean, it's been showcased that she can work outside of Republic, but for having played a lot, and I do mean a ton of games with Luminara, I still find that she performs a bit better when she's in Republic. Just because she gets access to those coordinated fires, she gets to enable precise strike. Like, it's not a lot more, but it gives her those tiny few extras that I felt that, like, if I really wanted to play Luminara to, like, her full potential, it would be in Republic, right? Because, for instance, right now, I think it's very fair to say that the best Mandalorian list, right, if you want to play all the Mandalorians from the core set, does feature Luminara. But is that the best Luminara list? I would argue no, which is a difference, right? It's the best Mandalorian list, but it's not the best Luminara list.
Out of curiosity, just because you brought it up, what do you think is the best Luminara list?
Oh, it's definitely Vader Lumi by a wide margin. It's basically the list I've been playing, right? Like, it's insane. That list is just so strong. I feel like I just dominate everything with it so far.
Well, I love that energy. So let's talk about that, right? So you have your two primaries, Darth Vader, Jedi Hunter, and then Jedi Master Luminara Unduli. Now, Vader has been touted as someone who has been very impactful in the meta. Very early on, he was a bit of a boogeyman. And while there have been a lot of counters, right, such as Ahsoka Dooku and Dooku Talzin, to combat that list and other aggressive lists that Vader can create, especially with General Grievous at the time, there's just been a lot of conjecture on, like, is Vader really that good? And it seems like he is, right? So why Darth Vader? Why did you select him? And what part of his kit makes it work in your overall strategy?
It's twofold. The first thing with Vader is he's a great unit on its own, for sure, right? Like, He's got those almost guaranteed wounds whenever he activates, which is really useful when you're playing Luminara because you want to get those flow of the force triggers whenever you really need them. So having a primary that does that is very good. And then his identity also lets you get a lot more of output out of Luminara, which is the other reason why I ended up going with him, is just that like it makes my Luminara's activation way more impactful. She's going to be wounding stuff way more often. So that means that, you know, often people are going to say, oh, Luminara doesn't do much on her activation, but that's fine because of her identity. But if she gets to do more during her activation, then you're getting more value out of that primary slot than you would normally. And then the last thing is really Vader really turns OB2 into a melee monster. OB2's got a great tree. He's got good expertise, just doesn't roll many dices, but like he can take that extra bonus dice and then become really efficient at getting almost always a full tree out of his attack. And it really gives him like decent damage output, good shoves, some repositioning, a lot of versatility in there. So that was the other reason.
And both Luminara and OB2 have recovers on their tree, which helps mitigate that damage, right?
Yeah, even though I guess with Lumi, you're almost never on the side with recover when you're attacking. You're normally looking at more like the other side. I forgot the name, but I think it's Makashi is the one with the reposition and the shoves. Yeah. So that's the one you want to be on normally when you're attacking. But yeah, sometimes you're going to be on Soresu and heal yourself. But it's really more just for getting like those extra damage into wound supports mostly.
Okay. Well, this is very interesting. This has come up because Ahmad and I have been saying on this show for a long time that Luminara is one of the better primaries in the game. And taking that one step further, that people honestly were discrediting her when that didn't seem fair. And in fact, possibly were sleeping on her. But we continue to see top players get great results with her. Nick, you're here with us. We've had a lot of other people we've had conversations with in the more competitive community just continue to do well with Luminara. So you mentioned Luminara is your favorite to play, but why Luminara and your list in particular? And why do you think people continue to just not give her the validation she should receive?
Why she doesn't get the validation, I think it's tricky just because like a lot of her impacts are less obvious than a lot of other primaries, right? Let's just look at her identity. It does three things, which is already pretty insane. Mm-hmm. You've got the EO, which is nice, but overall probably the worst part of her ability, but still healing tree here and there models is going to be useful. Then you've got, of course, what everybody focuses on, the dash whenever you wound someone, which is, of course, a amazing ability to have when you're playing for like scenario flipping, right? It lets you get so many more random objectives or contesting stuff that you wouldn't be able to otherwise. And then for me personally, the reason that I really got hooked on her is the other part where once you've got something on reserve, you can look at the top card of your deck before choosing if you reveal or play your reserve member. And that gives you so much more information when making your decisions. I've got Django in reserve. And then I look at the top card of my deck and I see it's like Clone Commandos or something. Then I know that I can sequence those two models in a different way based on that knowledge. And then depending on how many other cards are left in my deck, I can also make other guesses as to what's coming up, right? So the more like that ability stays extremely impactful and has been so huge into giving me clutch wins, I'd say.
Very well said. Yeah. And I think people do sleep on the global dash. I mean, obviously it's a good ability. Everyone agrees on that. But I think the combination of what you're saying, using her and in conjunction with the dash is just giving you a lot of agency that, you know, Shatterpoint initially is trying to take away from you to create some randomness. So all valid reasons, and the heal can be clutch, right?
I think the heal is a trap on it. Oh, sorry, the heal, you mean, yeah, the heal from the ability, yes, sorry.
Right,
yeah,
the one that's dictated by your opponent.
Yeah. Not you. The other one's terrible, never use it.
It's a trap.
My rule, yeah.
Once in every 10 games, you'll have a really good full heal, though. And it.
So far, I think I've used it twice in like the last 50 games or something, and both times I was like, I should have not done it, so.
Yeah, it's a lot of force.
It's very rough. I am a huge fan of Precise Strike, though. I think that ability is also really slept on. It's not like an every game move. It's not even an every Luminara activation, but it gives her that little extra juice when you're playing her in Republic that like getting two dashes on supports is huge. Like it's something you're going to get out of your beginning of activation ability for a lot of characters. And there you've got it as like a one force ability, which with her mobility, when she gets like, you know, when she's on Makashi, she gets a reposition on one and then she gets shoves. she's easily getting in a position where she can use it if she needs to. And also the five dice attack, I think, is very slept on. It's not anything amazing, but if you look at Clone Commandos, which I am playing in my list, obviously, they do great with that five dice attack because like all of their damage or almost is going to come through crits.
Yep.
And their expertise, which is, you know, are very good expertise tree for crits. Like the crit to expertise ratio is very good for support. So like you're not Magna Guards, but you're like right after them in terms of efficiency there. So you're getting a lot of extra damage that way when needed.
I love that breakdown. And we do want to get into that Clone Commando conversation in a little bit, but it's very fascinating because yes, you brought up the precise strike, right? Which again, I feel like a lot of people don't talk about it. I feel like people just say, as you say, the heal is overcosted. It's situational at best, but yes, her identity is good. But I love how you're just utilizing every single aspect of her kit. And I guess my question to you, just keeping this Luminara conversation going a little bit longer, is there a favorite ability you have outside of her identity? And is it Precise Strike?
It's definitely Precise Strike. I really got on that ability really fast. And yeah, it got me out of a lot of like clutch spots in different games in the past. And I've been really liking, right? Like, I just really like Luminara in general. I really like her tree, right? Like that on the Makarashi side is really nice when you get a few successes off, right? You're going to get some damage. You're going to get a bunch of shoves, a reposition.
Yeah.
So combining that with Precise Strike, you get a surprising amount of damage out of Luminara, which people don't expect.
Now, do you think dropping her from 9 to 7 stamina because of the Vader identity makes her open to getting clapped down pretty quick?
From my experience, not that much, because the first time she's going to be clapping, she's going to be on Makashi and then flip to her Soresu side. So unless your opponent has ways of exposing her, she's going to be very hard to take down because that defensive side is nightmare to go through.
It's nuts. Yeah. Awesome. Well, that makes a lot of sense. Now, continuing on, and I think it probably makes sense here to pause very quickly and for you to just share the general list that you played just for reference for all of our listeners. So correct me if I'm wrong, but it's Vader, Obi-2, Arfs, Luminara, Django, Clone Commandos?
Exactly.
Okay. Keeping that conversation going then, Jesse and I were having this conversation a while ago, and he mentioned in one of our previous episodes where he said that he was more interested in playing Obi-2 in Republic Premier lists over General Obi-Wan Kenobi, who is the primary. And ironically, at the time, we did get some heat from it from the public discords because we were actually thinking that maybe Obi-2 was the better pick in the Republic lists overall. It seems like looking at your Premier list where your other primaries are Padme and Plo, that you've come to a similar conclusion. What brought you there? And is Obi-2 just so much better that it freezes out General Obi-Wan from the Republic conversation?
Well, I mean, you can always play Obi-Wan if you really want to, but like Obi-2, from my experience playing a lot of games with him now and a lot of games against him versus mostly Morgan, who destroyed me with him, he's just so freaking strong that like I don't think if you're serious about trying to win a big event, it's very hard to argue not to put him in your premiere. Like you can do it for like fluff reasons or because you're like, I don't want to buy the model if it's or something, but like outside of those reasons, there's no like metric by which you shouldn't make your list. He's a secondary that can flip multiple points in a turn with the help of run, which I've had Reet do to me in a practice game not so long ago, where like he had reserved his Obi and like struggle two comes along, he activates him, repositions his Dooku onto an objective, and then moves Obi-Wan on another one and then like flips the point with Obi. And then because he maneuvered his Dooku backwards, he also gets that other objective. So like he flips two objectives on a single activation, which is not something that a lot of secondaries can do on their own. Of course, it's a bit more circumstantial because of run, but run in general is just such a strong ability. And whenever people talk about Obi, that ability is often not even part of the discussion, but it's insane. Getting to heal before the reposition also means that if you've got your instance Dooku or Vader that's pinned, you can just remove the pin with the heal and then still move. So you get fully repositioned. It can negate like a capture wire from Django. It's amazing. And then Mind Trick is not okay. Like that ability is just, it's just wrong. I really wish they would like give it a little bit of a quality of life improvement. But like as it is right now, it's just like insane. That ability on its own will often negate either a primary or a secondary activation. Because if OB, say, and is on a point and your opponent needs to shove him off to get it, no primary or secondary can do it unless they can attack multiple times in a turn, which there's very few that can, right? There's what, like Anakin, Luke, I think that's it. I guess Wrecker, once he comes out.
Hunter too, right?
Maybe Hunter. Yeah, the guys that haven't come out yet, I don't think about as much, but maybe those guys. But that's it. Like, everything else just gets owned and goes like, yeah, I can flip that point. And now they have like a dead activation. So yeah, OB2 is just insane. And he's got like a solid tree offensively and defensively. Like, he's got a really great expertise. You're normally not dealing damage to him easily outside of crit on defense, and he's immune to expose just, you know, as a cherry on top.
Yeah, speaking of things that are not okay and maybe a little overtuned, I mean, Django's also in your list. Is there a reason for Django being in your list in addition to OB2? Because you just gave us your OB2 reasons, so I want to hear your Django reasons as well.
I think it's up to debate which one is the most broken model. They're like clearly the two strongest models in the game for me. Like, I mean, if I could play them as primaries, I would probably do it over most primaries, to be honest. They're that good. But Django is just a machine. Like, the guy has got a move, two jumps if he needs to, right? Because he can focus for a jump, he can spend for a jetpack. He's got capture wire, which is like insane. Like, that ability is completely bonkers. Like, displacing someone and pinning them for a force, like, that thing wins games on its own. Then you've got not so fast, which is not an early game ability, but that ability mid-late game does stuff that it should not be allowed to do. Like, I've had two of my games in the TTS Top Cut against Matt Bronson, and I forgot his name, but the guy I played in the semis who was in the finals of Adepticon, I won both of not so fast, basically. Because, like, late game, you just, like, wound everybody a little bit, and then they can't activate anyone without getting the activation stolen. And then, yeah, it's very stupid.
Well, let's also not forget your list capitalizes on not so fast even more so than other lists because of Luminar's identity.
Yes, which is also, it's the reason why I started with actually Django in there with Lumi is because not so fast gives you that little dash, and that can do stuff that's really, really wrong. Like, you're like, yeah, I'm going to wound you during your turn, dash a model, get the objective. And then it goes from like, oh, you're scoring 2 to no, you're scoring 0. And now it's my turn and the game's over. Yeah, it's insane. Like, his attack is also very solid, right? Like, just on top of it.
I completely agree. And Nick, I just want to say thank you for validating what Jesse and I have been saying for since the show came out and those characters were revealed was they're just really good. Like, is there ever a world where you just don't take them? And I guess you kind of answered this no, right?
Yeah. Like, in a premiere, I think it's very hard not to have both of them somewhere in there. And if you're not playing a premiere, then you better have really strong arguments to why you're not playing both, right? Like, I mean, if you're playing like some of the like Rebels or like Empire and you can't bring Django, then you can't. But outside of that, there's no reason, I think, to not bring him.
That makes a lot of sense. Just to finish this secondary conversation very quickly, Jesse and I are big fans of Rex because he works really well in Republic. But taking a look at your premier list, you opted for the other two secondaries were... Oh, you did take Captain Rex. Okay, never mind.
Yeah, I did bring Rex, but he's like in my Plo Koon squad. Like, he's still amazing. He's just not quite as good as the other two. So like, but he's probably like one of the best, in my mind, either the best or the second best secondary in Republic at the moment. I think it's up to debate in between him and Sabe for me. But like, those are the two that I consider to be amazing in Republic, if you exclude the two broken ones.
That makes total sense.
Yeah, and him and Sabe are very similar. So that makes a lot of sense why you'd land there. But you're basically saying that there's no world where if it wasn't Premier, you would take Rex over OB2 and Django, even in an all-Republic list?
I mean, then I guess it depends, right? Because like, see, for instance, I got a lot of people saying that I'm not playing a Republic list because those two are included. I'm like, well, I don't know. For me, it's a Republic list. My primaries are Republic. My supports are Republic. If you look at my old Premier, like, they are the only two models that aren't. Like, I guess if for fluff reasons you want to be 100% pure Republic, then I guess do it. But otherwise, I personally don't see an argument. Like, Django is just too good. And I think OB2 also. And what makes both of them, I guess, just to expand on that point a bit more, so strong is they are the two, I think they are the only two secondaries that can entirely deny your opponent's activations, right? Like, either with Mind Trick, you can just, like, I've got two different ways that, especially that we're at the mercy of our draw order, right, in Shatterpoint.
Sure.
A little bit less when you're playing Lumi, which is why I play her, but you're a bit at the mercy of your draw order, but like if I set up that all your models that haven't activated yet are either at one wound near not so fast, or they're like a secondary or primary that's like stuck fighting OB2 on an objective where you can't do anything because of Mind Trick, then your next activations are going to be unimpactful no matter what you draw. So, yeah.
Well said. And you already laid out for us and the listeners the reasons why you're also just taking them for their raw movement as well. So when they go, they can reposition to other parts of the board and just score without rolling dice, right? So the combination of their movement and scoring and then directly affecting your opponent. Yeah, the denial. And I've never heard it said so clearly, Nick, than you said on this episode. I would take them over a lot of primaries in the game as my primary. That is the best way I've heard it said. And that is a good example of why they are so good. Is Django better than some primaries in the game? Yeah, he probably is. So that's a very interesting way to put it. And I'm just fascinated by that analogy. So now we got to move on to your supports, though, because, you know, Amon laid your list out so well. And I'm sure the listeners are curious about ending up on the ARFs and the commandos. So the ARFs with Vader, that's a tried and true pairing we've seen a lot, giving Vader exposes and stuff. If there's anything else you want to expand on that, I'm curious. But I think we're more curious on how you ended up with the commandos with Lumi.
Okay, yeah, the commandos with Lumi just are a natural fit, right? They come in our box, so that's a good indication that they're supposed to work well together. But in practice, they really do. I know a lot of people dislike commandos. I never quite got why. Personally, of course, I don't play them a lot outside of Lumi. But with Lumi, they are amazing because, first of all, with Flow of the Force, having access to scale lets you get onto points that you would not be able to otherwise by climbing with the dash. So that's a massive tool that can, and it's the thing with these kind of interactions, it's more like mid-game that they're going to be relevant than the early game. But like being able to scale back onto an objective with a clone commando, it can be really, really big. Also, for Lumi specifically, because our damage output for a primary is a bit limited, having access to the commandos, not the coordinate fire is not great, but it's one damage. It's one guaranteed damage, which when you combine with precise strike off of the commandos with Lumi, when they've already activated, is going to get you 2-3 more damage depending on your roll very often because expertise and crits and whatnot. So that turns our like very mediocre damage output into a very reasonable shot at wounding most supports and at the very least supports and then some secondaries if you spike a little bit or, you know, it just helps her get a little bit more damage out when she needs to. Yeah, so that's mainly the reasons. I just really like their attack, honestly. I don't know why people hate it that much. Like, I just like that guaranteed damage. Well, guaranteed, almost guaranteed, right? Because they're almost always going to roll 1 to 2 crits per roll, 3 if you're lucky. I'm counting expertise here as crits for this example, but like they're going to be often getting 2 damage and a pin, or like if you're a bit lucky, they're going to be doing like 3 damage, a pin and a strain. So both together are often going to be wounding a support if they can both shoot the same target. But they're just reliable at wounding supports, which is the most important thing to do in this game, honestly.
I think a lot of that makes sense, and I'm actually also thinking of the same thing. Like when paired with Lumi, I think they are a very good choice, and perhaps maybe even in general. And Jesse, you've played more clone commandos than myself, but a common experience that I've had playing against the clone commandos quite often, Nick, is they just die. Do you find that to be the case?
Maybe, but at the same time, the main thing I think I do that a lot of players don't do as much is I'm very conservative with my commandos or my supports in general early on. Because like you've probably heard it a lot, but like in general, the main thing that people are going to say is like the main thing you want to be wounding as fast as possible are supports, right? Like that's so like if I draw my supports early, I'm often not even sending them on the midline. Well, it's not true. Commandos I will never send. Arfs I will because I don't care if they get wounded. But like the commandos I'm going to say for like I want them to be able to like get later in the game onto objectives as extra bodies through like precise strikes, flow of the force, and all that stuff. And I want to preserve them and save them at worst just for like their little coordinated fire and whatnot. And they're going to be more like focused on protecting my back points than anything else early game. So I try to avoid sending my supports to the midline.
So they're just an easy reserve target for you early on?
No, never reserve them. If I draw them, I'm just going to move them like on my back point and do nothing. I'm fine with that. Like if, let's say like first draw, first turn.
Yeah.
I'm doing this. Of course, if you're playing second, it's going to be a little bit different, but otherwise, I'm just not even committing them. I don't want them to die early.
Does that change if the objective sets differently? Obviously, that's a really tried and true play pattern for Republic on Sabotage Showdown, the just sitting on the back and not doing anything. But can you afford to do that on Shifting Priorities, or do you do that often on Shifting Priorities?
I would also do it on Shifting. The thing with Shifting also is I would always place them because there's only one back objective. So I'm going to set up the other one to cover one of the other back points for like potential second objective. But of course, now recently I've been playing way more Sabotage than Shifting. So like my Shifting experience is a bit more rusty, but I would do the same thing on Shifting and just accept that, you know what, like, it's going to suck early, but like, I'm not sending them on the middle. There's no point. Like, if you send your clone commandos, or honestly, almost any supports on the midline, outside of like the extremely durable ones like Magna Guards and all that stuff, you're just going to get wounded instantly. So why give free wounds to my opponent?
Very valid and very fair. That makes a lot of sense. Do you feel like that strategy changed with Mission Pack 3, Never Tell Me the Odds, or have you not taken a look at that yet?
I have not taken a look at it yet, so I can't comment on that. I've heard that it's going to be way more like brawly and like close quartered, but like I can't comment on it, honestly.
One more clone commando question, Nick, while we're here. I think another reason why people don't like the clone commandos, especially in Republic packages, which are tend to favor defense anyways, it's the lack of shoves on their tree. Has that been an issue for you? It sounds like the way you play them in conjunction with Vader and Luminara and the damaging style, it's not as much of an issue with you, but I mean, can you see why people think that?
I can see why, and it's definitely led to issues. And it's one of the things I wasn't happy with that premiere is like, if you're also running End Maidens or something, it can really pile up on the lack of shoves. Yeah. But outside of that, I find that my clone commando's main job is finding supports and shooting them to wound them, or just to apply pins on like primaries or secondaries that I want to limit their mobility. So in that sense, the lack of shove doesn't bother me because they're really just there to output raw damage into supports, or even like they're like surprisingly good at like wounding Jango over a few shots because they're not going to deal damage with their successes, but like their expertise plus crits is going to get a few damage through every time, which is something that Jango really hates. So they're really good at that kind of stuff. Or wounding Obi-2 is also really good at getting wounded by clone commandos over a few shots.
Makes perfect sense. No, well said. And obviously, they are different from the rest of the clones in that way, where they're more about incremental damage and less about the consistent shoves, right, that clones typically have. So, well, moving on to your premier list, you did mention it, and we are curious to hear about your Plo Padme list that was the rest of your premier format list. So can you guide us through what that list was and what led you to select Plo Padme?
I did not play Plo Padme as a list to be played together. I'm more of a fan of like the same way that Morgan had approached Premiere right in the first season, where like my main goal is I have like my main list, which in my case was Lumi. I wanted lists that worked with it as much as possible. And I've done a tournament recently with Plo Lumi, which is basically the two lists I have for my Premiere. And I just played those two in a tournament and went really well. I went 3-0 on that local event. And I really like that combination. It's like it's got like that more control-y vibe. Right? Like if Vader Lumi is like really all about attrition, the Plo Lumi is more about controlling the board state. I'm not going to do as many wounds, but I've got good control elements with Plo Koon's Force Push and with Jango with Capture Wire. And then you combine those two with like opportunistic flow of the Force triggers. Plo Koon also like his identity, since they've like clarified it that you can actually, you know, get the dash off without exposing yourself, makes him so much so efficient at just like helping contest objectives. And I really like that with Wolfpack and Rex, it really just makes a nice package. And then for my last list for the premiere, I was not very inspired by any of the other Galactic Republic stuff as much. Padme was one of my first really big love with the game, so I really wanted to get her in there. So I just like took her box, and it pairs very nicely with Vader. So like that was the plan, to just have that as my other option. Yeah, there's not much to expand on those two, especially not Padme. Padme is, I think, just a solid model. I really like what she does. And one thing that's really fun is End Maidens with Vader's extra damage. Extra dice is a thing of beauty for murdering. Like in a practice game against Finn's Shun, I wounded his Vader in a single activation of End Maidens with like the help from the coordinated fire from Padme for 2 damage. Because they're outputting like 5 damage each very easily.
Very impressive. So you're saying the Vader identity for them to hit in melee?
Yes. it's not what you would expect, but like that expertise giving them an extra damage and like often a crit, and you're just rolling like 8-9 dice plus.
Yep.
It's impressive. It's a surprising amount of damage.
So I love that, actually. And that kind of makes a lot of sense given the fact that they want to be up aggressively alongside Padme anyways, bodyguarding her. So they're going to be stuck in melee more often than not. Might as well benefit from that.
Yeah, entirely. They definitely like that, and they become a surprising amount of damage, which is interesting. So yeah, that was like the backup, and it was mostly just because I wanted to get Padme in there to play her at least once. And otherwise, I think Plo Koon is an amazing character. He's very, very sweet, and he's definitely slowly getting up there in terms of my favorite primaries for Gar. He's really, really nice.
What do you think about his identity?
It's interesting. I really like the free dashes that you get. As for the other part where you give the expertise, I don't think I've ever done it. It feels like a trap more often than not, but the whole like getting dashes like wins you game. It reminds me a little bit of Ahsoka, but instead of it like, oh, my support's going to get wounded, I'm just going to dash Plo to like contest the objective still and like save it from being flipped, basically. And that's very sweet.
I think this is a really good way to kind of, you know, we've been talking a lot about the premier format, and I love it, right? And I think Jesse and I, huge fans of how that format is, because it kind of forces you to make hard decisions. In thinking about the different formats, I know that there have been other people who've been very vocal about how they prefer Showdown over Premier. Do you have a preference? Do you have a choice?
I personally definitely prefer Premier. Just because like it means that you actually have to make more interesting list decisions, and there's a lot of ways to approach the list building. I know a lot of people like to do the, you make just two distinct showdown lists and you just play them spread out. But like, I personally really like when I can have like clearly a distinct pairing, but like, I'm a fan of having my other options just being like, I can kind of like mission match them with the other stuff more easily. So that's been my personal interest and approach to it.
Makes sense. I like that. And I really like particularly how you said you can play Vader Lumi, Vader Padme, Lumi Plo, and you could probably do Vader Plo as well.
Yeah, I could definitely do Vader Plo, and I think Plo Padme is probably pretty decent too. I just haven't had the chance to play it, so I wasn't comfortable trying it, but it's probably pretty decent.
What about Lumi Padme?
So Lumi Padme, I've really tried to make it work. The issue is with the way I'm currently set up, I get stuck with having both Clone Commandos and End Maidens, and they both are shoveless, and that becomes an issue. I think if you want to make that specific setup work, you need a different support unit in your Lumi list, probably Bounty Hunters at that point, which would probably make it work, but then I'm sacrificing the overall strength of my Lumi list to make a specific pairing that's like really not the one I want to be playing the most. So yeah, not worth it, I guess.
Makes a lot of sense. Also, that list is very force intensive, and I don't know, the 6-4 starting out with that, there's a lot of layers to that.
It's definitely tricky, but I think it's manageable once you get a decent amount of experience playing Republic. My main takeaway from like whenever I play against other Republic players is I find they spend way too much force on defensive maneuvers when they don't really need to. Or, you know, like, it's like, oh, I really got to do that thing right now. And it's like, do you really need to do this? Like, how relevant is it? Taking Republic specifically, it's very important to be very, very, very careful with your force management. Because if you look at my Plo Lumi list, I never felt like I was, if you pair those two together, it would look like it's going to be force hungry. And it kind of is. But like, if you're prioritizing properly, you never feel like you're running out of force. You just have to pick what you're doing with a bit more care.
Well said. Yeah. And a lot of future planning and making sacrifices now to do something bigger down the line, right? Like maybe cutting some defensive maneuvers to guarantee Plo's late activation force push, right? So totally valid. Yeah. And well said about the Republic economy of the force. So speaking of your list, and now the TTS League has concluded again and Vader has won it again. We've seen this archetype of Vader with Jango and Arfs perform well in the TTS Leagues. Do you consider this to be the best single contained list in the premier format at the moment?
Pretty much. I mean, of course, in my case, it was Obi that was with Vader. So it's not entirely the same thing. But like, as I mentioned earlier, like basically if you take those three models and add Obi in there, you're probably just got like the best stuff you can be doing in the game at the moment. And you can mix and match that with a lot of stuff and be very strong. I do personally think that Vader being Galactic Republic is a bit of an issue. He's already so good at killing stuff that like with ARF, it just makes it trivial. So that's definitely a bit of an issue. And then like having the option of playing Django in there too really makes it so that list, like if you're not playing Django somewhere else, it's just so strong. Like all of your models are highly impactful. You've got the best supports in the game probably for like just like helping murder with the ARFs and their expose ability, the coordinated fire. And then you've got Django, who's just like, you know, Django. Just does Django things all the time. And then you've got Vader, who's like just like straight up the best murder machine. And he's also like just so freaking tanky while doing it. It's impressive. Like he's got so many hit points.
And fast. He's fast.
Yeah. He's surprisingly fast, yeah.
Vader's taken it 3 times now, so it's notable, right? And worth exploring. So I like what you said about the ARFs, where you're like, they're just like icing on the cake of already two amazing models, and the ARFs are just giving me a little bit more guarantee. But are the ARFs like have to be there? You think that's essential?
At the moment, I would say yes. I know like for a while, like stuff like Magna Guards were a thing with Vader a while back. But I think that currently ARFs are really hard to replace. I think if you really want to play Empire, you could maybe argue for Stormtroopers, but then you can't play Django, I guess. So like that makes it worse. But I guess you could do OB2 instead, and that's probably still pretty decent. Like I really think ARFs are really impossible to replace as long as they exist, as is for Vader. It just like really makes it so you can go after anything, right? Like, because otherwise, like wounding a Luminar on our defensive side, for instance, will be dicey. But with ARFs, it's a joke. Like you're just going, you're exposed, you're dead. Boom, problem solved. Same thing for Ahsoka. Well, no, not if she has a force to reflect damage. But even Dooku gets like it very hard when he's exposed. So yeah, it's a bit of an issue, and it's very strong. So yeah, but yeah, I'd say like basically right now the premier, like this TTSC has been won 3 times by like the same shell. So like, because like even though I'm playing something different, it's still mostly Vader, OB, Django, and ARF. So like, I know that AMG's been saying that there's nothing that needs to be changed in the game, but you know, if they ever change their mind, I think that's some good place to look at.
Well said. You're saying keep an eye on Vader, Django, and OB2 in particular.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I won't say anything more than that other than vindication. So we'll move on. Now, I was going to ask you in regards to shifting priorities versus Sabotage Showdown, but we've kind of already established that this is a Sabotage Showdown list. I suppose, why do you like Sabotage Showdown over shifting priorities more?
The reasons are twofold. And it's interesting because one of them I had fully nailed down until recently. But basically, with shifting, winning the third struggle, if you won the second one, is way harder than in Sabotage, right? Because in Sabotage, a third one, a player doesn't get to choose a shape in between two to get the more favorable one. So like, if you're on the back foot, it's easier to get the struggle 2 and 3 in Sabotage, which is something with Galactic Republic I used to find to be a bit of a struggle, because it was like always a bit tricky, like, okay, how am I getting... Because you don't really want to send your supports right to the middle if you don't want them to get wounded instantly. So I would often find myself losing the first one on shifting and then having to climb my way back up. So because of that, Sabotage felt a lot more natural for me to play from a scoring perspective. But after that, the fact that the shape is wider overall in terms of like, you know, the midline points are very far apart, then you're kind of like playing it more on like 2 lanes, which is very reminiscent of a B shape in Marvel Crisis Protocol for people that have played that game, where there's like 2 sidelines and you play. But like, what I find interesting is often how to capitalize on that shape is mobility and making the proper rotations on both sides. I find way too many people try to fight it as like just my right side versus your like right, like as 2 lanes. I think you're going to have way more success in Sabotage if you can shift around in between both sides. Just something I find very interesting in terms of mobility. And with Luminara specifically, Flow of the Force really lets you get that extra movement in there to play that way.
I think a lot of that is fascinating. And I think I'm kind of seeing like how you're able to do so well with the Vader-Lumi pairing specifically, because correct me if I'm wrong here, but in the West bracket and whenever you played Vader-Lumi together in the top cut, you never dropped a struggle.
I have not. Nope. I went 7-0, dropped winning all of my games 2-0 on struggles, which is pretty impressive. Especially that I beat in the fifth round of the West bracket, I beat Matthew, who was playing his Dooku 2000 list from Adepticon, right? That he won Adepticon with. So, I beat him 2-0 on that shape. And then, I also beat Vince Chan 2-0, another amazing player. So, I got a lot of very dominating games. I actually never felt like I was on the back foot in any of those games. The closest one was probably against Matt, who was also playing Lumi Vader. And we had exactly the same list, except I had Clone Commandos and he had Clan Kreese with Lumi.
So the last season of TTS and kind of the last bigger meta of the game, we saw Mace and Padme all over the place as kind of a defensive list. So you have Plo in your list, and we're kind of talking about the rest of your list that didn't come up as much. But do you think Plo has replaced Mace because of what Amon and I call the pawn stacks? Or do you just think Plo is just a little bit more versatile?
Well, I can't speak for everybody else, but my experience with Mace has always been that he's kind of trash. I always thought that he was very bad, but it might just be because everybody locally was already playing Django and OB all over the place. So Mace doesn't like getting capture wired, doesn't like getting controlled. He doesn't like having to deal with OB too. So he's very weak into those models. Plus, now with Sabotage Showdown, I find that he's even worse because he can't cover the whole field as much. Right, in shifting, it's easy. You get him in the middle, and you can leave him there for the whole game, and he's going to be covering most of the board with his range 5 ability. But on Showdown, you're stuck impacting only half of the board. So and he's very slow, so he can't really shift to the other side easily if you need him to. So because of that, I think Mace is very bad at the moment. I always thought he was bad, but I think he's even worse now. But I mean, he's bad also because of what's very strong, right? I think he just struggles into the Djangos, the OBs, and all that stuff. And Plo is just way more versatile. Plo is just an amazing model. I really like him. He's very, very sweet. Even then, I do think personally, Plo is more of a better Ahsoka than a better Mace. For me, I play his identity a little bit the same way I would use to think about Ahsoka, which is whenever you're going to be wounding my stuff, I'm going to... Because normally when you attack support, you wound them very often. If your primary gets in, wounds my support, then Plo is going to be close enough that I can dash onto the objective to save it from being flipped. So in that respect, I see Plo more as a better Ahsoka than a better Mace. But I think I can see the reasoning behind Mace versus Plo. And either case, Plo is just a better model.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think Never Tell Me the Odds, Mission Pack 3, because if it's more of a condensed structure, Mace might see a bit of a resurgence there on certain lists. But I think you're right. Sabotage Showdown, compounded with the fact that Django and OB2 are just everywhere, means that he's in a tough spot right now. Absolutely correct assessment, for sure. Going back to some of your games that you mentioned, I found it very fascinating, particularly because you played Matt Bronson, right? Zeus Juice. He had a mirror match. And so I was very curious on how that match was going to pan out when I first realized that you guys were going to be playing a mirror match, but then you two owed him. Now, one of the conversations that Jesse and I were having on the side was Clan Kreese is just a great piece that you can throw in any list because they have access to shoves very quickly on. Do you feel like the Clone Commandos outperformed Clan Kreese in that matchup? And then, of course, any lessons learned, as you're going through your games, and we don't have to go through every round you played in the Top Cuts, but there's a couple that we do want to shout out.
Yeah, that was an interesting game. I think it showcased a few different things we had in terms of thinking. Of course, the draw order on the first struggle was definitely a bit nicer for me than for him. But he also did stuff that I see a lot of players do, and I think it's important to maybe rethink for a lot of the community, which is you don't have to every activation always go for what's going to give you the most points right away if you're sacrificing too much in the long run. It's something that came up in that game a few times due to his awkward draw order, right? Sometimes the draw order is a bit more awkward for one of the two players, but one of the key points in the game was he drew his Clan Kreese really early and just sent them to the middle. So I just wounded them right away with Vader. So that gave me a very nice positioning advantage early on. And then his OB came up as the last card of his deck, but he drew his Shatterpoint really early and he used it to reactivate his Clan Kreese to rescore points right away, but then that just got me to re-wound them, right? And then they were already wounded and not doing much. And he kind of used his Shatterpoint for that. And sure, he scored two objectives on that turn, but it backfired, two extra objectives. But like, personally, what I would have done, and we talked, I talked about it with him, I would have just like shatterpointed Obi to get him into the action, because that way he could have started negating my Vader's activation instead. So there's that kind of stuff where like, it's like sometimes you're better off doing a play that's a bit less strong right away, but it's going to set you up better for the rest of the game. That's something I do a lot, especially I think it's the not so fast mentality where like, always ask yourself, should you even be wounding something right away? Always like, right? Like, I'm getting a bit sidetracked here, but like in general, I think people go too much for the wounds when they shouldn't.
Right.
Too much for just like, oh, if I play this right now and like spend force and do this, I'm going to flip those two objectives. That's cool. But like, if you spend too many resources and then expose your clan Kree's to getting murdered because like I haven't drawn Vader yet, then is it really worth the sacrifice right in the short term versus doing something a bit more conservative and like having more resources left for the long run? And it's definitely something that in that specific game, I remember giving me the advantage was this. And that's why I wanted 2-0 was my OB got to be really well positioned compared to his very earlier. And then I got to own his supports very fast at clan Kree's. And then the commandos actually did really good in that game. They had an activation where they wounded two models that were like already injured. So like at the end of the game to like score out the last round right after I had not so fast at him with Django. So, you know, classic. But the commandos did very well because compared to clan Kree's, because even though like in paper, they're not really that much sturdier. Like they mostly took attacks from like his clan Kree's, I think once, and then like Luminara, like, but like nothing that's super hard hitting. So they just like live through way more attacks than like clan Kree's ever would have because of protection. Because protection is the kind of thing that like only adds up when you're getting hit by like stuff that doesn't hit as hard, which is where commandos shine. Like, so like when you're getting hit by like your opponent's supports, commandos are extremely tanky. When they get hit by primaries, they melt instantly. But like ideally you want to try to force your opponent into those situations. And that's what happened in that game.
No, I appreciate the insight. And I think it makes a lot of sense. And the point that you've been highlighting throughout that retelling was the fact that, and I really want to hammer down on this, a lot of times you're right, people will just say, how do I get the most points? How do I get the most points? Because you're right, in Shatterpoint, it's about getting points. You win off the points, and being able to flip multiple points in a game is certainly the best way to operate in theory. But you're right in that specific nuance is maybe it's like, all right, well, maybe I just don't push the needle further just so that I get a better activation, which cascades and snowballs the game to me winning the game later on. And I think that example that you gave about the clan Kree's and the Vader was particularly poignant for me. Jesse, do you have any follow-up questions on that in particular?
Nick, correct me if I'm wrong. It sounded like you guys, since you were a mirror, you had your Vaders facing off and your Luminaras facing off. So it actually had the clone commandos make even more of an impact in that matchup because they were kind of breaking the mirror on that side. Is there anything that came up in that game with you guys' Vaders that was impactful? Like, did yours go a certain direction and Matt's didn't or something like that? Like, how did the Vaders play out?
The main thing is because I drew my OB earlier, I got my OB in a position where I would negate Vader from doing stuff while his OB was still on the back line, right?
Right.
And that's why, like I mentioned, when he shatterpointed the clan Kree's, I would have personally just, you know what, my OB is still not in the action. I'll just shatterpoint him to get him in there. Because the moment he gets there, my Vader doesn't get that free reign on the map anymore. He's not wounding supports left and right, like every activation. And that really what made a big difference. But that's a drawer part. But like, I think that's where sometimes, especially with OB, there's always an argument when you know you need to negate something specific and you haven't drawn him yet, but you've drawn your shatter point. Do you just shatter point him to get him in a position to use mind trick? And I think the answer is probably more often than we think, yes. Because your activation might not be as impactful, but you're negating your opponent's activation almost entirely after. And that's definitely worth a shatter point. At least in my mind.
Fantastic call out. And I think Amon and I can attest to this where we've had games won or lost because of getting to our OB2 faster than our opponent, right? And right. Getting them in a position. So very insightful for you to lay that out for us that your OB2 essentially got in position early and kind of locked down that side. And once again, breaking the mirror parity.
Exactly.
What I would like to focus now on is, so round 3 in the top cut, you played against Iceman, one of our patrons, yeah. Dean Bills. And you opted for Lumi Plo. Was that just because you knew you had to play Plo as you were getting closer to the event? Or do you just feel like that pairing was really good into the potential list that he had, which seemed to be a bit more separatist focused?
There's a mix of both, right? I looked at his list. I saw that it was more separatist focused. So right there, I felt like I'd care more about having Django than Obi in terms of like secondaries that I really wanted for the matchup. And I had just played a tournament with that specific pairing as my premier, right? Like I didn't change anything to get more games in with it. And I'd really liked it. I was like, okay, I'm going to play it. It feels very strong. It's a good control-y list. It felt like against what he was likely playing to be pretty good. And that game ended up being very nice for me. Like I almost won it. I should have won the first struggle, but then like I just forgot that my Django was still alive. I thought he was wounded. And because of that, I didn't flow of the force him onto an objective. But yeah, it was a very interesting game. A bit frustrating more due to rules knowledge, which is something that I've had a talk with Toras, and I have to make some photos about that because you guys have played MCP, so you're probably familiar with the movement rules where like you can only have one of each tool on the table.
Right.
So if you're using something to place within a range, you cannot measure a range from something else. But a lot of people think that, say, for instance, you get up of an ingress point. When you're going up the ingress, then if you place within one, people often don't even put the place one on the table and are measuring range from something else. It's like you're not supposed to do that because you have to have your range one placing and you have to eyeball other stuff, right? So like there was a little bit of argument with that, which made the game a bit more unfortunate due to rules interaction. But outside of that, from a pure mechanical standpoint, it was a fun game. Rex definitely did really well in that game. So did Django. Django almost pretty much won me the game. I got to do the not so fast to win struggle two play, right? So like I was one short and then he activated Kraken. I not so fast him, wound him, gained the momentum, which scores me during his turn, the second struggle. So I got to start the third struggle after having won the second one, and then it was blazingly over fast. Yeah, not so fast is not an okay rule.
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely shared some thoughts on how it should be changed, but that is not a conversation for today. But I will say it is a very one-of-a-kind feeling when you win your struggle on your opponent's turn, and then you get to start the struggle with the advantage. It's pretty nice.
It's insane.
So you're saying the momentum cube fell down on top of your scoring?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Just to paint the picture for the listener, yeah. Django can do that.
Yes, certainly has. Now, I'm guessing Plo also, because with Separatists, you kind of have to punch through some really heavy stamina, and with Plo, you can just shove them away and just win points that way.
Yeah, basically, if I remember correctly, in that game, I barely did any wounds, right? Like,
you got 5 wounds.
5? Jeez, that's more than I remember.
And Dean got 4. So it seemed like 9 wounds overall is pretty fair.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, for a game that went to third struggle, yeah, that's reasonable. Yeah, it's mostly Clone Commando's punch true is B2's surprisingly fast with some help from like Django and Lumi. And then, yeah, I wounded Asajj very fast too, which was very nice. She really doesn't like activating once she's wounded. But once her jump starts costing 2 and her push 3, she becomes way more awkward. And I mostly just got Django to win me the game, I'd say, because he's Django.
Yeah, Django does that. So does Obi-2, right? So
yeah.
Moving on into your final game then, and I think this is where I find it to be the most interesting. So we see Maul Lumi, and your opponent was Rodiak Mont-Ka. And I'm assuming that's the all Mando list into your Padme Vader list?
Exactly. And that game was definitely the closest one of the whole tournament from my perspective. Like, that was a great showcase of why I feel like whenever I'm on Sabotage Showdown and I'm not playing Lumi and my opponent is, the Lumi player has a huge advantage. His flow of the Force trigger really let him get a lot of extra scenario points off. And I think, right, that's why when I was saying like the thing earlier about Sabotage Showdown, I feel like this is the shape for Luminara. She's so strong on it. Flow of the Force becomes so good. She also very easily can move herself in between like a side with her reposition. But like, yeah, and he played very nicely. We were on like a very basic map. My draw order was very awkward at the beginning and my dices were kind of awkward, right? Like my first Sabe attack was 9 dice into his Maul. And I rolled 8 expertise and a fail. So it started really rough with the dices. But then, you know, the dice is always even out. At the end, he got unlucky. But otherwise, the game was very interesting. He played that list very nicely and gave me a lot more respect for the Mando list. in very well, though, like using jumps to get on top of buildings and then use the ingress points to go down, which is something I don't see people do enough in general. And he really used that nicely to get some extra movement with his models. Like combined with Flow of the Force, you can have a Mando go really far in an activation. It's very interesting to see, very well done. And for my side, well, I got to like win some objectives with OB2 because he's OB2. Like I logged down the middle and at the end, he kind of like saved me the game. But like I did make a massive misposition error by going a little bit too fast. And had one of my ARFs at some point outside of my trick range, and it got him the window to wound them, which was very bad for me. But yeah, the game came down to a few small mistakes on both sides and him making a big one at the end, and then his dice is not cooperating. But yeah, it was a very good back and forth game. Yeah, I don't know. He played it very nice overall. Like, I really like what he did. I don't have much more to say. The Handmaidens did overtime in Melee in that game. Vader did also great work. Interestingly enough, I only got to play Padme once. I never replayed her because like the game was over before the end of the second shuffle. Of the second deck. And she just played first, moved onto the middle, got wounded by a mole, and that was it for her. So she didn't get to showcase to do much, but Sabe did nice work overall in the end maiden, so that was nice.
Any big plays with Sabe that helped break the tight game?
She had a few windows where she could have just... She got into his back point on the second struggle while like wounding, I think, his stormtroopers or something, and then getting on top of like the objective. So like she got to move around a lot, and then like super late game, she had a window where she needed to deal 4 damage, I think, if I remember correctly, to Mole. And if she deals it, I win the game on the spot. But sadly, I left him on 1. But like her mobility was great, right? She's just so freaking mobile. I really like her mobility, and she's surprisingly tanky. People always forget that her bodyguard thing applies to herself.
Yeah.
She's very nice. Because like people always shoot her and they're like, oh, why are you rolling 6 dice? I'm like, well, I have bodyguard on myself.
Yep.
She's always very nice.
Good to remember with Chewbacca coming in the game with the same ability, right?
True.
He's going to be very similar. So were any pieces on his side? You mentioned Maul getting, you know, wounds at certain times, but was there anything else on his list that made an impact in that final game, notable moments with other units in his squad?
I think overall, Bo-Katan really surprised me. Like, I hadn't played against Mandos in a while, and Bo is still, she's pretty nice in there. Like, And I think it's easy to forget because she's from the core set, and I think it's a nice to see her. Like, she literally, like, one of her activations, like, flipped, like, 2 objectives, like, because she got to jump one of his super commandos into a position. And then she moved, got some eels off. Like, it's also very interesting. Like, you guys have probably talked about it, but I hadn't played against Atlas in, like, forever. But, like, it's always annoying when you're on the other side and you have to deal with, like, bow healing stuff. And then, like, there's also the fact that, like, at some point, you also have to be very careful because of Lumi's ability where it's like, well, if you wound something, then something else gets healed. And then bow activates and heals something else again. And then they're like, well, suddenly a lot of your damage. And that's something I really did poorly. I'm just so used to playing like the more like I want to get everything low and then like chain wound stuff when it matters, that like in that game I definitely should have went for wounds a bit more in a few instances. So like that backfired for me a little bit. But that was also him just like using Bo to really keep his models in like awkward out spots. But yeah, Bo was really did a lot of nice work. Even though at the end she kind of like scrubbed out when she tried to wound the Ars, but you know, mind trick kind of like helped there.
Yeah, Bo's also interesting in that like she's very good in the beginning of the game, but then as she gets bogged down and starts taking wounds, she's efficacy, you know, goes down a little bit. Especially with, I mean, that's true for all Mandos, honestly, because their mobility just goes down the drain, right?
Yeah. Once they're wounded. And when you have to pay force for the Mandalorians are stronger together and all that stuff, it really, really hurts.
Yeah. So it makes a lot of sense in regards to why you played Plo, why you played Padme, how they paired together. But moving on, like, so we've talked a lot about the current meta, Nick, and how it's kind of almost at the tippy top, as you say so yourself. It's kind of shaken out. We know how it's going to work and what's good and what's not. How do you anticipate the upcoming releases will shake up the meta? Do you think Vader 1, Vader Jedi Hunter, and Lumi is still your optimal list? Or are there characters you want to try that you think can maybe overthrow that?
It's definitely going to be interesting, right? I personally don't look at stuff too much before I get to play with it. Normally wait for them to be released. because that's more like my approach. Like, I haven't thought too much about the upcoming stuff, right? But just already, I find that there's some stuff that definitely underexplored, right? Like, if we look at the meta, like, if we establish, right, that currently the best things you can be doing is playing OB2 and Django. Like, let's forget about the rest. I think this is definitely, you can put anything around it, just play those two, and you're going to have, like, the strongest list possible or almost. So, like, you're just finding the shell that you prefer. Like, if you take this into consideration, there's a few models that stand out that need to be explored more. Personally, Luke Skywalker, I think, is going to be very good. I think he's already strong, but I think the more stuff comes out for Rebels, the better he's going to be. And I think he's just a great standalone model. I really like his immunities, his mobility, his efficiency. Even gets an extra attack, so he can kind of, like, push through Mind Trick with shoves when needed. So, like, that's very relevant. Same thing for anybody that's interested in playing Galactic Republic and doesn't want to play Vader 1. I think Anakin is actually in a really good spot. I think I'm going to surprise a lot of people by saying that. But the fact that I'm going to end this can bypass Mind Trick is a huge factor that needs to be considered more in list building. In general, like, whenever I look at lists, I'm like, can I play around Mind Trick? Is there ways that my primaries can play around it? Are there ways that I can mitigate Django's? If I've got ways of doing that, then I think it's an interesting list. Ewoks are also, I think, very strong and underplayed and underexplored. I know, like, the last thing I talked about with Morgan before he stopped playing is we were both agreeing that Ewoks look to be pretty busted. Their win rates doesn't reflect that, but I don't think people have had quite the time to play them enough yet. I think they're, like, way harder to play than they look like. But I think Ewoks are going to be very, very strong.
I don't disagree with you regarding the Ewoks, especially because Chewie is a scout as well. So he can become an Ewok scout with Leia moving forward, which is super exciting. So you've kind of talked about what the meta looks like in terms of what you're guessing moving forward. I'm really curious because I really like this secondary conversation. And it's a conversation that Jesse and I have a lot because it's like, okay, OB2, Django, yes, best secondaries in the game. You should always use them. I'm going to throw a hypothetical at you, Magic Nick. Let's say you can't use Django and OB2. What do your Republic... And are you still playing Republic at that point, like with Vader, Lumi, Shell, right? Whatever people want to call it, Republic or not. Because I think Wolf is a great secondary. Obviously, Sabe is really great. Ahsoka, Padawan Ahsoka is great. But they're just keep getting knocked back a little bit because of the OB Django conversation. Do you like any of those? I mean, even Barriss, like, is there value in them?
If those two didn't exist for some reason, I'd probably either not play Republic. Well, the thing is, like, for Lumi specifically, I don't find her to be all that strong as, like, a main choice without Django, like, personally. Like, I find that if you remove Django from the equation, because it's just, like, so much control that he brings to the table. I'm not even talking about not so fast, just, like, capture wire and his ability to go really deep. But otherwise, if I really wanted to still play Republic with those two, I think I'd go with probably Rex and Sabe, honestly. Sabe does, like, has some very interesting plays with Lumi. When you get to use our coordinated assault to move and then flow of the force to move again, you can, like, double dash her during someone else's turn to, like, go flip an objective, which is very strong. Like, I say I wound something with the clone commandos and then, like, your supports and then get Sabe onto the objective. It's very nice. You can also use flow of the force on yourself. So whenever she activates, she can also wound some, like, you know, she can, like, dash, move, climb, shoot, move off of the shoves and whatnot she gets. And if she gets a wound, she can move with flow of the force. Before I played Django, I was playing Sabe in that list a lot, and she felt really, really good. So I would definitely go for her, and probably just Rex for Vader. Wolf is also very interesting. I just find he's a little bit behind the other two. I just really like coordinated assault. I like mobility in general. It was the same thing in Marvel in every game. I just like... If I can, like, slow you, pin you, make you miserable, and run around you in circles, I'll be happy. So, like, whenever I can do that, I'm happy. So, yeah, Sabe all day.
Sabe all day. Love it.
So, Rex and Sabe. You heard it here. Yeah. And would you take Sabe without her handmaidens?
Oh, definitely. She doesn't need handmaidens. I think that's the one thing. People keep thinking that she only works if she's got handmaidens. Hell no. Just play her. Just play her more. You're going to be amazed.
I think people just like that she can move the handmaidens on her turn, which is massive, right? You can
swing. Oh, yeah. It's definitely strong, but, like, it's not needed for it to be good. Like, just a free dash on herself is already plenty enough. And she's got an amazing attack. Like, that attack is insane. Like, 9 dices with like strong expertise, really good results. Like, she's amazing. She really, really, really deserves. Like, I know a lot of people want to play like pure clone or something, but like, I think in general, Galactic Republic players really should give Sabe as a standalone model more of a chance. She's really good.
I just want to make a quick note to Sith Emperor Kevin, because I know you're listening. Told you so.
Good stuff. Well, you also mentioned too, just mobility outside of your turn and within your turn, you like to play that. And you tie it to Marvel Crisis Protocol too, Nick. And I might go here a little bit off script, Amon, but it might just be a fun time to ask the question of Nick. What things did you carry over from Marvel Crisis Protocol, your championship play there? And then what'd you carry over into Shatterpoint? And maybe what are some things you maybe like differently between the games?
Oh, well, okay. For stuff that I carried over, definitely scenario play in general. I think while the two games play scenario differently, they're both scenario-centric games. Right. In both games, the main way you're going to win is through scenario.
Right.
Attrition is going to help you win scenario. And I think in Shatterpoint, this is even better showcased than in Marvel, where like it's really like, well, if I wound your stuff, then you know I'm going to gain momentum, which is going to help me claim the struggles. But it's still scenario centric. And for me personally, I think it's one of the reasons I've been liking Shatterpoint a lot now is like Sabotage Showdown, which is a bit wider shape. Reminds me, I mentioned it a little bit earlier, but the B shape in Marvel Crisis Protocol, right?
Right.
Just
right.
The two lanes with like a fair distance in between. And that's my favorite shape to play in Marvel by a wide margin, because like it's where mobility still shines a lot, but you can still always apply like for shifting from one side to the other while still being able to play that like attrition game on the two lanes, right? But I think one thing people underestimate is the strength of mobility on that shape, especially struggle one where like, I'll go back to like my current list, but like, you know, OB2 and Django can both reach your opponent's back point, I believe, in a single activation. I know OB2 can for sure. And I think Django also can if he goes like move, jump, jump. Or maybe short. Maybe short a little bit and I need a Lumi dash to get there.
Right.
But like OB can get there with run, move, take cover, which is always something people don't expect. And you're like, hey, now I'm on your back point. So if they weren't guarding it because they moved their stuff forward, you can steal it very easily. But yeah, for like, this is really what I like the most about both games is really the similarity and the focus on scenario play.
Right.
And as far as like gameplay from Marvel, like in Marvel, when I won, I won by playing like a super fast scoring scenario Avenger centric team, which was exploiting a lot of like extract steals that people weren't playing as much back then and just really dominating the game that way. And also playing it very controlly, like, you know, very control centric. And if you look at a lot of the stuff that I'm doing in Shatterpoint, it's similar. I consider my list to be control lists first and foremost, because I'm looking at denying what my opponent is trying to do a lot, right? Why like models like OB2, Django, Plo all resonate with me. They have a lot of control. They have a lot of ways of stopping what my opponent wants to be doing. And it's the same thing in Marvel that I really like. I like when my opponent can't play, I guess, which isn't always fun for the other one, but hey, it's part of the game. So. And outside of that, as far as like stuff, I really like in Shatterpoint, the way scenarios are played overall. I really like the whole like taking control of objectives, the way it works compared to Marvel, I think is very fun. I would like for the game to have a bit more dynamic in terms of shapes or options, but you know, overall it's very sweet. I like the dice consistency. It's a bit less RNG centric, but at the same time, a primary that rolls really poorly can really hurt you more than like a bad role in Marvel. I don't know. Both games have their ups and downs, but I've been liking both. And in terms of competitive play for both, it's just like scenario, learning how to pace yourself is the other important thing that I transferred from one game to the other.
I love that. Great synopsis. Yeah. And I like you're talking about the crucial times of playing conservative, I think, are a little bit, maybe not at the forefront of people's mind in Shatterpoint. And maybe it's something we can all improve on, especially after hearing your interview here, right? Where you were, the example you gave with the Clone Commandos, I think it was a prime example of just not giving your opponent free momentum is what you said. And I think that's very helpful.
Yes, that's something I transferred from Marvel a lot where like I play very careful. I don't like to expose stuff for no reason. And I find I think the best example is whenever you play first, right? You know, you're not scoring objective. If you're only flipping one by sending a support on it, you're just telling your opponent, hey, come kill that guy. If they draw something on that side that can that can wound it, they will just wound it and take the objective, and then you've done nothing. And if they draw on the other side, well, it's cool. They're just going to go get the other side. But like, you're not accomplishing much, so why give away free stuff? It's the same thing that like when people used to like just like double move a model in Marvel and like go grab a midline extract and sit there, and they're like, well, now you've got even more reasons to wound, like murder me. Just, I have an objective and you want to wound me. Like, it's two things you want to be doing in the game, and I'm just giving you both at the same time. But like, unless your model is extremely durable, I think in general, you want to avoid doing that.
Makes a lot of sense. No, well said. And the first player concept also adds a lot to that too. So I'm happy you laid that out for us too. So if you're player two, how much does that change? Does that change in a big way with your supports, or is it just still play them conservatively?
It's going to depend on what the first player did and what was his first draw, right? That's going to be a big influence. I think it's something that's always worth looking at. But of course, like if you're playing second, you're going to be scoring right away. So it's more worth it to send your supports to score in that position because they are scoring. But I would still try to score in like the most awkward spots possible. Like if there's a terrain, like don't go on the exact elevation that the objective is on. Go into that weird spot that like you can kind of like go like, I'm scoring it, but like you can easily steal it from me from just moving in a better spot, right? Like going on the right elevation or something, so that, but make it so they can, it can be harder for them to attack you and take it at the right elevation at the same time, so that they have a bit more of a opportunity cost if they chose to go for the wound. It's basically what I try to do in those instances. Like if the objective is like on the third floor, send your support on like the second floor behind the terrain piece or something, right? Try to get in a position where it's going to be awkward for your opponent to wound you. But like if you're second, you do need often to go score it. But it can be matchup dependent, right? What did your opponent draw? What did he send? Because, there's a few factors, but that's what I'm going to try to do in those instances.
Absolutely. Well said there. Yeah, and helpful tips for us.
Absolutely. I really appreciate the connection between both games. And again, kind of ties back to what we said at the beginning of the episode, right? Is that the game theory that you have through your experiences just translates to almost every game, especially when, as you so pointed out, they're all made by the same guys, right? All three games you've played.
Yes, exactly. So there's definitely some design philosophy in between the old games that you can translate.
Absolutely. Well, my last question for you before we end this episode out is more of a fun one. We've got a ton of releases out on the way, right? And we had this huge showcase at Adepticon, Ki-Adi Mundi, Kit Fisto, we have Han Solo, Gideon, Mandalorian, Bad Batch, General Veers. Is there anything that you've seen, if you have seen it, that you're really excited to just, as a fan of Shatterpoint and Star Wars, get your hands on and play on the table?
Just from like a character perspective, probably Kit Fisto. I really liked him in like the cartoons, right? Like way back, like he was pretty cool. When he got like his underwater episodes and whatnot, it was pretty cool. So like him, definitely I'm excited to try for that reason. And otherwise, like the thing I'm most excited to play at the moment outside of like what I'm playing is Ewoks. So this is what I'm going to be playing in the coming weeks. Play a bunch of Ewoks. All Ewoks all day. Maybe Obi-2 is going to sneak in. We'll see.
We're super excited to hear about your progress with the Ewoks. And then, of course, continuing to fly that Republic flag and showing everybody that, yeah, I mean, you know, people can say that your list isn't Republic, but I mean, I think it is. You have a Republic shell, right, with Vader, Lumi. You're running ARFs, and you're running Clone Commandos, which a lot of people sleep on. So, as you said, it's just, it would be silly to not play Jango and Obi-2. When the opportunity arises. So we love the Republic getting some great wins here. And we're curious to see how the trends continue. I mean, Vader 2 is looking pretty good paired with Gideon moving forward. So will Jedi Hunter make it to the next TTS season league finals? We'll see, right? But I thought today, Nick, I really want to thank you for jumping on because it's been a great conversation just as a podcast for sure, but also as a student of the game in terms of Star Wars Shatterpoint, as all of us are, just talking philosophy, learning about your experiences and you sharing your insights. For me, like, this has been my favorite interview on the show. And I don't say that lightly because I feel like I learned from it, but I also got to talk to someone who knows, who like practices what they preach, right? And they're a master in the sense that they've won something big and they're willing to share their tech and their techniques and strategies with everyone, which I think is super amazing because a rising tide lifts all ships, right? So not only are we learning, but the community is learning. And hopefully we can all get better because of it. So thank you, Nick.
My pleasure. It was really fun to be on. Thanks a lot. It was pretty cool.
Good.
Yeah, I second everything Amon said, Nick, and I just want to shout out you repping Republic in the field and a very competitive dark side game right now and doing well with Republic. I think it's great. So keep that up.
Cool. I'll try to.
Well, before we wrap things up, Nick, is there anything that you want to tell to the community? If they want to reach out to you, are they able to? How can they do that? Is there anyone you want to shout out? Practice partners, your local, anything like that? You have the floor for the next 60 to 90 seconds.
Well, I mostly want to shout out the guys that are organizing the TTS League. Otherwise, a big shout out to Morgan Reed, even though he's not playing the game anymore. He definitely helped me improve a lot at the beginning. And also want to shout out Vince Chan, who's been my more recent practice partner. Yeah, those two guys have been wonderful to help me improve as a player. And outside of that, a big thanks to everyone that's playing in the TTS leagues. Looking forward to playing with more players. It's always so fun to get a place where we can actually play. Like, for instance, like the guy I played in the finals, Rodiak, he's from Italy. It's so amazing to get to play against someone that's so... And they often have a completely different outlook on the game than like the more local meta, right? Like, or even just like the American meta or whatever, right? So like, it's very fun to play against the players from outside of it. That's pretty much it.
Well, thank you for all that, Nick, and shouting out some amazing players as well, that names that have come up time and time again in these communities. So it makes sense that they're your play partners. And yeah, just thank you for your time today.
Thanks.
Well, we got to tell you guys the places you can find us online. Number one, we are supported by our wonderful patrons. You can go to patreon.com/hellotherecast, support us there. As we said at the beginning of the show, our league's about to start. Now would be a perfect time to jump in the Patreon and get immediate access to the private Discord and get playing with new people. But of course, you can find us all over the internet, different places, X, Facebook, Instagram, Twitch, at HelloTheirCast. If you need to email us, you can email us at HelloTheirCast@gmail.com. And any reviews or listens or subscribes on your podcast platform of choice really helps us out and means a lot.
Absolutely. We also want to give a huge shout out to Lowfield for our show's music. And thank you again to Imperial Terrain and Mr. Laser.
Good shout out, Amon. You guys are all the places you can find Nick. You can find me and Amon several spaces online. You can find me, Jesse, on X, Instagram, Longshanks, Discord, all at the same place, at Jesse Aiken, JesseEakin. And check out my show about Marvel Crisis Protocol and the Marvel Universe, Fury's Finest, everywhere podcasts can be found. Amon, where can everyone find you?
You can find me on most Discords in some variation of Amon, that is A-M-A-N. And of course, you can find me on my podcast, Path to Glory, the Warhammer Underworlds podcast that focuses on competitive gaming, player development, and community growth, which is also on all major streaming platforms.
Very good. Well, we hope you guys enjoyed this insightful discussion with Nick. And we'll see if Vader can take the TTS League a fourth time coming up.
Cue heavy breathing.
Perfect. May the Force be with you.
So uncivilized.